it's that time again, and the doctor is in. It's time again for Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon. And I trust you have had a wonderful week with your technology. Yeah, you know, here on Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon, we're always celebrating technology and things that pertain thereunto. Oh, yeah. Well, I tell you what, it's time once again for Dr. Bill, and this is Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon, episode number 19. Wow, 19 weeks of computer curmudgeonliness. Yeah, every week it seems like I'm making up a new word, and it just kind of falls all over itself. Oh, well. Anyway, we're talking about technology once again this week, and, you know, I've said before, if you tune into the podcast to hear how to, arrange flowers, sorry, dude, you're on the wrong podcast. You know, this is all about tech, and that's what we're talking about. Tech and things pertaining to geek culture and computer science and technology, things along that line. So, you know, if you are looking to learn all about, you know, flower arrangements or car repair or, sports, haven't a clue. Not even in the least. Nope. You know, I've told people before that the extent of my knowledge of cars is I open up the hood, I look in there, and I say, yep, it's got an engine. There you go. That's as far as I can go. I check, does it have an engine, and is there gas in it? Then it should just go, okay? That's just about it. Now, you know, more and more they're putting computers in cars, so maybe one day I'll be able to, do something with them. Maybe even be able to do an upgrade, you know, memory upgrade to a car. Now, there's an idea. Or a CPU upgrade. Hey. All righty. Well, let's talk a little bit about what's happening in the tech world. If you go to Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon, the blog, which is, of course, at www.thecomputercurmudgeon.com. Can you do that as fast as I can? I doubt it. Thecomputercurmudgeon.com. I would encourage you to go there and read the blog and find out what is happening in the tech world. We're going to start with an item about an unbelievable video in your browser. Now, this is a really, really cool video. Very nice, soothing music. Very nice video. Lots of birds and flowers and trees and animals and things along that line. And it's really pretty. But the cool thing is that this video is done with Flash. And you need the latest version of Flash. You need Flash version 8, which is the latest, greatest version, to view this properly. And so I'd encourage you to go out, first of all, download the free Macromedia Flash player. Now, you may already have Flash installed. I want to say again, you've got to have version 8. If you don't have version 8, when you click on the link, you're not going to see a thing. It's going to be just black. You'll hear the music, but you won't see anything. But if you will go ahead and load the Flash player, the correct one, and then click on the link about amazing video, you will see an amazing video. And the quality of the image is really, really, really good. And I think it's indicative of where we're headed on the web with the quality of the video. Now, once again, Dark Moon sent me a comment at Lux et Umbra. Lux, I said this time, not Lex. You know, last week I said Lex, and I apologized over that. I'm learning. I'm getting it. Lux et Umbra. And Lex pointed out that he did see pixelation in the video on his 19-inch Sony LCD. Well, I don't have a 19-inch Sony LCD, so I couldn't identify with that. My 17-inch, it looked really, really nice. But, you know, one day when I get my 20-some-inch LCD, then, we'll check it out and see the difference. You know, what is this, Keeping Up with the Dark Moons? Yeah, well, anyway, one day when I get the upgrade, I'll have to check that out and see if it does indeed pixelate. But in the meantime, it looks pretty good to me. And those of you that maybe have smaller screens, or perhaps better video cards, maybe you won't see the pixelation. Okay. I'm just picking. Okay. All right, the other item that we want to go to is kind of a personal item. That is that WordPress 2.0 came out. And, you know, I mentioned it before the Christmas holidays, but I said at the time, I'm not going to try to do the upgrade over the holiday because who knows what might go wrong, and that would just ruin the whole holiday. So I waited, and I did the first upgrade of my blog. You know, actually, and I haven't mentioned this, I don't think, on the podcast before, but I have two blogs. I have one that has to do with technology, which is what I'm talking about right now, thecomputercurmudgeon.com, but I also have one that has to do with natural health, and that is traditionalnaturopath.com. And that is also a WordPress blog, and it is also hosted on my Linux server, and so I decided I would do it first. You know, nothing against the natural health blog. You know, I like it too, just as much as the computer curmudgeon. But I will admit, I've been doing it, you know, not quite as long as the computercurmudgeon.com, and I don't have as big an audience there. So if one was going to blow up, I felt like that, you know, that might be the one to blow up first. You know what I mean? Get your feet wet with that one before going to the one that everybody's hitting fairly regularly. Call me silly, but it just made sense to me. Anyway, the upgrade went very well, and I was very pleased with that. And so, you know, no issues at all. I had a few little tiny technical things I had to fix. For instance, I was using a plugin for WordPress called Simple Tags. And you may have noticed in the blog that at the end of each article, I have Technorati tags at the end of each one. And normally, you would have to code that. You know, you go in and you'd have to actually code the HTML to do the Technorati tags, which isn't a big deal. But if you're like me and you're trying to use the blog every day, every other day, that can get a little tedious. So there's a plugin for WordPress called Simple Tags that allows you to put a tag called tag, in front of each word, and then a closing tag / tag at the end of the word, and then when the blog actually appears, it gets translated by the Simple Tags plugin into the Technorati tags. Pretty cool. So that was one thing I had to upgrade. The other thing I had to upgrade was the audio player. It didn't want to play well with WordPress 2.0. And the big one, the one that really was kind of a problem, that there was at least a fix available for, was Spam Karma. I don't know if you've noticed, if you go to the bottom of the blog, there's this gray, kind of a dark gray bar that says this blog is protected by Spam Karma 2. X number of spams have been eaten and counting. And what that's doing is as people try to spam the blog and try to hit it, Spam Karma catches it and pulls it out of the blog and protects us from seeing all the garbage that people are trying to send about Viagra and porn sites and things of that nature that people spam blogs to post. Yes, and you know the doctor's response to that. They should all be lined up and shot. Yes, you got that right. You've been listening for a while now. You're beginning to catch on. Okay, so the upgrade went pretty well. And, you know, with those few caveats, if you do have a WordPress blog and you've been waiting, you know, you have those plugins, you know, there are now fixes for them. So waiting a little while for the people that write the plugins to catch up, good plan. Okay. All right, this next item is one that is particularly near and dear to my heart, so to speak, and that is that Microsoft, once again, is coming out with its FUD, Fear, Uncertainty, and Doubt campaign to try to run Linux down. And this one, I got to admit, is the lamest thing that they have done. Now, they've done some pretty wild things. You know, they tried to say that it's cheaper to run Windows than Linux. Duh. Linux is free. I mean, F-R-E-E, free. and Windows costs what? You know, they try to make the case, and here's how they try to make the case, and some people buy into this. I don't personally buy into this, being the heavy-duty Uber geek that I am, but they try to make the case that with Windows, when you install it, you click on Setup, okay? With Linux, you don't just click on Setup. You actually have to know something about what you're doing. You have to know how to, you know, use some various products to untar files and to put them into directories and to run shell scripts and things along that line. So, okay, at least in the current, older to current day, you have to know a little bit more about technology and about Linux in order to actually administer it correctly. I'll grant you that. Okay. Now, it's getting easier. There are more and more GUIs and more installations that are simpler and simpler. And a lot of installations these days is just a matter of typing .install.sh from shell script. Oh, my. Did you hear that? I just got email. Okay, you know what? Let's just turn off the email notification there. That was PopTray. PopTray just came up and said, "Yo, Dr. Bill, you have an email." I knew one day that was going to happen. Do you realize all of this time has come and gone that I've done podcasts and that has not occurred? So, wow, pretty cool. Well, anyway, PopTray is one of my featured Geek Software of the Weeks, for those of you that are interested in it. And that sound, how many of you could identify that sound? Yes, you're getting it? You almost got it? Yeah, you almost got it? Yes! Somebody out there, I heard that. Yes, you got it! It was a Star Trek communication being initiated in the original series, coming across with the next thing that would happen is that Uhura would have said, "Hailing frequencies open," or something along that line. But anyway, yes, that was a sound that I had found on the web and associated with PopTray so that when email comes in, I would get notification. And I did. And it interrupted me. Now, where was I before I was interrupted by Star Trek sounds? I was talking about, oh yes, Evil Microsoft and their Fear, Uncertainty, and Doubt campaign against Linux. Okay, here's the thing. I realize that Linux can be a little harder to administrate than simply running setup.exe. But more and more programs is what I was saying, is that more and more programs in Linux you install by doing .install.sh for the shell script, which runs an install script and installs the program. And, you know, under Red Hat or something like that, you've got an RPM file. You can just click on that. It'll run. It will install. You know, Debian, you can do a, you know, apt-get update or an apt-get install. I mean, there's all kinds of simpler and simpler ways of doing things depending on what distribution of Linux that you're using. But even so, going to a shell and typing apt-get space install space product name is still a little bit more than clicking on setup or just putting a CD in a drive and it starts, auto starts and runs. You know, okay. I mean, I've been a Windows administrator for many, many years, and I've been a Linux administrator for many, many years. And personally, I prefer Linux. I've got more control. I can do things, to me, in a more reasonable, controlled fashion. Windows does almost too much for you in some areas. And so, but from Microsoft's perspective, as they did this particular study that I'm talking about some months and months back, their argument was is that you can get people to administer Windows cheaper because they don't have to be as, shall we say, knowledgeable about their craft, okay? And nothing against Windows administrators. After all, I are one, to use the twisted vernacular. But, you know, I'm also a Linux sysadmin and actually prefer to be identified as that. But at any rate, Microsoft tried to make that argument that Linux was not as cheap to run as Windows because you could get by with dumber people. So, obviously, that's something that they want to talk about publicly. Yeah. No, not really. Anyway, they started having all these different things trying to prove, you know, that Linux is not as cheap as Windows, which is crazy. I mean, it gets weirder and weirder. Their latest one is the one that I was talking about in the blog most recently on January 9th, and I was talking about the fact that they have come up with a comparison study where they claim that Linux runs... They test the claim that Linux runs better on legacy hardware, and they try to claim that Windows actually runs better on legacy hardware. Now, I would challenge them to take Windows 2003 server and run it on a 386 with, let's be kind to them, 64 meg of memory and a 386 33. How's that? Okay. It's going to look at you and laugh. Oh, it's just not even going to try to install. It's no way. However, there are several distros of Linux that will install on that machine and actually run and run happily. This is proven scientific fact. Microsoft can't get around it. So you might say, well, then how did they use this study to demonstrate that Windows was better with legacy hardware? Well, they took distros that were optimized for modern, current, fast hardware, optimized for that hardware. Like, let's say, Red Hat Enterprise Linux, and tried to install that on a 386. Well, of course it's not going to run. I said there were distros that would run on one of those machines and run quite happily. And let's face it, there isn't a copy of current NT-based kernel Windows that would run on that machine. I'm sorry. Even NT wouldn't run on that machine, and that's not considered current because they retired it. The only current, if you want to call it that, Windows would have to start at Windows 2000, which is actually... now legacy, or Windows 2003 server. Now, I'm talking about server here. You know, I mean, really, you get right down to it. Windows 95 is not current. 98 is not current. ME is certainly not current. XP would have to be, okay, 2000 workstation. Yeah. Professional, yeah, okay, I'll give you that maybe, but even that's not really current. XP is the current released product, and there's no way it's going to install on that system. So Microsoft is just blowing smoke big time. So man, that was dumb of them to come out with that, because every geek in the world is sitting there going, it's you guys. You know, my first thought was, these guys have got to be running scared to even try to make that kind of a study claim. Oh, man. All right, next item. Creative redefines the word podcast. Now, this is another one of those, as the English say, cheeky things that they tried to do. Creative. Now, first of all, as I say in the blog, here's a little plug for Creative. My personal MP3 player is a Creative Movo. And I really like my little MP3 player. I really do. I like it a lot. I appreciate Belinda, my wife, getting it for me. It's great. The thing about it is that it does everything I want it to do. I don't need an iPod. And I certainly don't need to pay iPod prices. But iPod has the majority of the market. And a podcast, the term podcast, whether Creative likes it or not, came from iPod broadcast, or broadcasting to iPods. And that's just where the word originated. Well, Creative came along and said, you know, that's not fair. So we're going to say that podcast means personal, P, on, O, demand, D, broadcast, P-O-D, personal, on demand, broadcast. That's what podcast stands for. Well, okay, sure, why not? Now, come on, Creative, get real. Just admit, you know, it's like a tissue. We don't ask for a tissue. We ask for a Kleenex. The word Kleenex is actually a brand name, but most people just say, can you pass me a Kleenex? They don't say, pass me a tissue. Do you have a facial tissue? No, you don't say that. Hand me a Kleenex. Or, you know, if you're a true geek, just give me a napkin. Anyway, the thing is, there are certain words that pass into the language, and their origin is just because that brand has become synonymous with the product. So, move on, guys. Come on, creative. Oh, well. Another cool thing. Microsoft gets the government thumbs up. Way to go. MySQL is, of course, a great open source database. Now, I will say they have a quote-unquote commercial version that MySQL AG puts out and supports. You can buy full support for it. But they also take that same source code and release it open source. There you go. And it is fully free and available open source database. So MySQL is excellent. As a matter of fact, MySQL is a database behind the Computer Curmudgeon blog. It's, you know, running behind WordPress. All of my server databases are running MySQL. Excellent, excellent stuff. But what's cool about it is that the U.S. government has a division that's called the General Services Administration. And they, basically, if they don't approve a particular product, then there are some government agencies that can't buy that product. Well, the GSA contract GS-35F-0131R Schedule 70 will allow them to now buy and deploy MySQL. Ta-da! So now the government can use MySQL. Well, they've been using it for a long time because a lot of places are very open to open source. Open to open source, that's good. Los Alamos National Labs, U.S. Census Bureau, U.S. Geographical Survey, NASA, Department of Defense. A lot of people have been using MySQL, but now they can use the fully supported official through the GSA purchased version. Yay! Way to go, MySQL. I love to see open source software getting accepted widely. Just does my heart good. There you go. All right, let's go to the next item. This is putting the final nail in the legacy claim story. This is a great link to a Linux Watch article by Stephen J. Vaughn Nichols. Now, Stephen writes great stuff concerning Linux. And, you know, I'm just going to link to this, click on this link and look at this article. This is his opening line as he wrote this January 9th. Microsoft's most recent anti-Linux FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, efforts are perhaps its most pathetic ever. Man, do I agree with that. In a recent eWeek story by Ace Operating System reporter Peter Galley, Microsoft claims Linux legacy Linux's legacy claims. Bill Huff, director of Microsoft's Linux Open Source Lab, claimed that the lab's tests of Windows and Linux on legacy hardware found that when they were both installed and run out of the box, it put to rest the myth that Linux can run on anything. Hill's point is that, of course, you can strip Linux down to run an older system, and that's what you would do, but that the users that are most likely to run 1990s vintage equipment are the ones who are least likely to be able to set up Linux properly on antique hardware. In other words, they don't know what they're doing. Again, Microsoft admitting that people that don't know what they're doing are the ones that can't do Linux. Think about it. Okay. To prove his point, Hill took full-scale server and desktop distributions, say that 10 times fast, like Red Hat Enterprise Linux, SUSE Linux 9.3, Linspire 4.5, and Zandros 3, along with Microsoft's own Windows XP and Server 2003, and tried to run them on older hardware. To no one's surprise, he found that none, including Windows XP and Server 2003, none of them will run on 1997 vintage hardware with a 233 megahertz Pentium, 32 megs of RAM, and a 2 gigabyte hard drive. Well, wow, what an amazing study this has been. Excuse me, what a groundbreaking effort they put into this to demonstrate something that we didn't know. Whoa, man. What Hilf didn't mention was, according to Microsoft's own tests, Slackware 10.1 and Nopix 3.7 do run on this hardware. Whoa, they don't mention that because, of course, it actually worked. And, of course, remember, Windows didn't run at all. Anyway, I might add that other modern Linux distributions, which are designed to run on low-end systems, work just fine on such PCs. I personally run Damn Small Linux, Mepis Lite, and Puppy Linux out of the box on a compact 350 MHz Pentium 2 with 32 megs of RAM without a hitch. You see, Hilf doesn't mention that besides Linux distributions like Fedora that are designed to get the most out of today's hardware, there are plenty of distributions that are designed to get the most from yesterday's hardware. You notice there's not a version of Windows that is designed for yesterday's hardware. You know, and why? Because with Linux, you can actually redesign the operating system yourself because the source is open. You can choose what parts of it you want to use. Anyway, I won't read the rest of the article, but he finally says at the very end, here's the bottom line. No matter what Microsoft may claim, if you want to get the most of an older system, there's a Linux distribution out there for you. Suggesting that Windows XP or Server 2003 is reasonable, alternative is simply a bad joke. Amen. Hallelujah. You are right, sir. Oh, my. Anyway, he said it better than I possibly could, so I just put a link to the story and said, check that out. Final nail in the coffin on that legacy claim issue. All right, next item. Symantec is found using rootkit feature. Now, Sony got into tremendous trouble because they were using rootkit technology. Now, Symantec is using rootkit technology. Guys, get a clue. This is not smart. Now, what they're doing is they have a Norton protected recycle bin feature that essentially they are designing with rootkit technology to cause things to basically disappear. Well, you know, that's well and good in and of itself, but it allows you then to have files that can disappear on your system, and people can engineer harmful files that will disappear using quote-unquote this technology. In other words, if you are running Symantec System Works and people have some kind of exploit, then that exploit won't even show up if you were to try to find it. Now, they do note, Symantec notes, that on-demand scanners such as Norton Antivirus would discover malware if it is loaded into memory. But still, you know, they are courting a PR disaster with this rootkit technology built into their product. And, you know, personally, I've never really cared that much for Symantec, you know, particularly Norton Antivirus. Now, back in the day, okay, it was cool. But, you know, we've come a long ways. I would personally prefer to use AVG or Avast or, you know, some kind of more free technology. As a matter of fact, on one of my systems, I'm using totally open source ClamWin, which is the Clam antivirus, open source free antivirus, and then I've tied it with a product called WinPooch. And if you look in the Geek Software of the Week, the listing of Geek Software in the Week category, you'll find an explanation of how to do that. And that works very, very well, and both are totally open source, totally free. You know, go for it. I'd rather do that than fool around with Symantec, because if you install Norton Antivirus, have you ever tried to uninstall Norton Antivirus? I mean, it's like a virus in and of itself. Anyway, I digress slightly there. All right, next item. U.S. Patent Office upholds the FAT file system patent. Microsoft decided to patent the FAT file system. Now, the FAT file system is not talking about your doctor, you know. Dr. Bill is a tad on the, shall we say, rotund side. But nevertheless, no, we're not talking about that kind of FAT. We're talking about file allocation table, FAT, FAT file system. And Microsoft decided, hey, let's patent the FAT file system. Now, this, despite the fact that they have moved away from the FAT file system and went to NTFS, and, you know, with later versions, they're even developing a whole new file system that will eventually, one day, end up in Vista. But, you know, still, we're talking about the FAT file system, and you might say, well, why do we care? I mean, if it's an old file system, what's the big deal? Well, the deal with the FAT file system is it's pervasive. People are using FAT for a lot of things, notably thumb drives. What if you had to pay Microsoft, oh, I don't know, X pennies or dollars or whatever every time you used your thumb drive? Or every time, more likely, you bought a thumb drive. The price of thumb drives could jump because of Microsoft trying to defend their patent for the FAT file system. Now, somebody somewhere in the open source world is going to jump on that and get some kind of open source version of a file system, probably already out there, and I just haven't really looked into it because so far it hasn't been an issue. But at any rate, I'm sure in the long run it's not going to be a huge, huge deal, but it just bugs me that Microsoft is out there trying to patent a file system anyway. But anyway, there was basically a group that was trying to tear down that patent, trying to say that there was prior art and that Microsoft didn't have the right to patent it and so forth and so on. And on Tuesday, the U.S. Patent Office announced its decision to uphold the patent, and now coders and users in the free and open source software community, as well as the makers of a wide array of flash storage-based electronic devices, in other words, thumb drives, are wondering just how big of a bind they're in. So I make the statement, will Uncle Bill demand some money from you for using your thumb drive? We'll just have to see. I hope he doesn't. You know, I mean, he's got more money than, I guess, anybody we can think of personally, you know. Certainly more than anybody I know. Why he would need to charge us for using his precious FAT file system that he doesn't even want to use anymore anyway, I don't know. But anyway. Well, you know, that's about it for the program. We're running a little long, actually. But you might say, well, Dr. Bill, I thought you did the podcast on Saturday. Well, you know, normally I do. But I'm going to be traveling Saturday. As I record this, it's actually Thursday night. And so that's why you're hearing it early. So I didn't want to not do a podcast this week. So we are doing a slightly abbreviated one. But, you know, as usual, your doctor is waxing a little long. Anyway, so it's actually not a shorter than usual podcast. It's a longer than usual podcast. So, amazing how I just managed to take care of all these little problems like, time, but just rambling along and talking along. There's the music. Well, I guess the show's over. Until next week, your doctor is out.